B-Pod Studios.
Are you ready for this?
Whee!
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hour number two here, Felger and Mass. Mike is out. Jim Murray's alongside. Adam Jones here to give us headlines and his usual negativity. What do they call those, you know, peanut gallery comments?
Yeah, the peanut gallery.
Jones has got it mastered.
I'll tell you, the peanut gallery was really going on Thursday, I can tell you. It was popping.
Is the peanut gallery, like, is the origin of that term someone who's throwing peanuts at the back of your head? Is that the idea?
I'm guessing.
I'd imagine.
Because that's what Jones is. Throwing peanuts at you the whole time while you're making your comments. Sniping at you, throwing little peanuts, whipping them off the back of your head.
But the term originates with vaudeville theaters of the early 1900s. The peanut gallery was another name for the cheap seats, either at the very back or the front rows of the theater, where opinionated audience members would loudly heckle the performers.
Yeah.
Jones.
That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, there you go.
The Jones Gallery.
I'd like to rename it the Peanut Gallery is where I sit.
So, look, you said something earlier that I think is in sync with something the previous caller said. Like, if you're a free agent now, for years, you heard people want to come here to play with Brady. Felger's argument was, well, he thought that was overrated and that they would go wherever the money was. In the case of the Patriots, they could probably pay a little less because they had Brady. What is the lure now? What's it now? You don't have Brady. You're not paying anybody, at least this offseason. And if I'm Von Miller and I'm a free agent, I'm coming off a Super Bowl win, and I had another ring with Denver, and I still want to play on a winner. Guess where I'm going? Buffalo. If I'm Russell Wilson, I'm going to Denver. So you've had veteran players, Matt Ryan, Indy. Like, you've had veteran players now looking around saying, no, I want to go to a place that can win. They're not picking New England. Leonard Fournette came in here yesterday for a visit. Less than a day later. He re-signs in Tampa with Brady.
And what did someone tweet you, Jones? That Fournette just came up here because Brady what?
Oh, I don't remember.
I saw you retweeted. It was great.
Hang on.
It was
efforting.
I'm paraphrasing here, but someone that you retweeted said, oh, yeah, no, Brady just told Fournette to go up to Foxborough just to see how bad everything is now and then come back down to Tampa.
Hey, he's a mole up here getting information. Or the Patriots are just leveraged now. You know, the Patriots are just, oh, hey, look, I'm going to go up there. I'm going to take my visit. But really, this is how I get a couple of million or an extra year or whatever out of my team and where I really want to go. That's what they are. They're a sideshow. They're leveraged.
So that's how I feel. Like, Leonard Fournette used them. He used them. Yeah, let me just stick my head up there in New England. You know, let them think I'm going there. And then Tampa Bay will give me 3x7 and I'm going there. $11 million guaranteed. And that's what he did. So he went to Tampa Bay. So, again, I would say right now, if you are a veteran guy who's a free agent or you're on the trade market forcing your way out, Von Miller, Matt Ryan, Leonard Fournette, take your pick. You're that kind of guy. You want to go play for a team that's going to win and make a little dough. Where are you picking, and where are the Patriots on that list? And I would tell you, they're barely in the top half of the league, if they're even that.
Yeah, they're in the middle of the pack.
They're just another team out there right now.
If you want to go somewhere, lose, not get paid well, and get coached hard by a bunch of bozos like Joe Judge and Matt Patricia, this is the spot for you. I don't think it's the strongest pitch, but we'll see how it goes.
I mean, it is. They just, at the moment, they do not have a lot going for them. They really do not. Marcel's in Woonsocket. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. What's going on? Considering Matt Ryan, you got to consider this is, as far as his career with Atlanta, the Falcons had the worst defense in the NFC for how many years? Jonesy, Murray, check it out. How many points allowed? So he's really uncomfortable and not on the field. With, you know, he had to be forced to throw for touchdowns.
Marcel, what are you getting at? That he didn't have a lot of support in Atlanta and he's better than he might have shown there?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Look, overall.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, and I would tell
that saves us the research then, Murray. Good.
Yeah, so
I also think that's crazy. They had really good running backs. He had Roddy White, then he had Julio Jones, he had Tony Gonzalez. He had weapons. He had a lot of to work with there offensively.
Do you think he's got a better coach now?
Yeah. I mean, when it was Dan Quinn, I thought was a pretty decent head coach until he got exposed in the 28-3 loss in that Super Bowl. But I think Frank Reich is a good coach. I think you overrate him though.
Who I do?
Yeah.
Frank Reich.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I probably do, Murray. I overrate everybody that's not in New England or in Boston. Yeah. I think they're all great until they come here, and then I see the warts like everybody else. So I don't think you're wrong to say that. But I do think that Matt Ryan's a good fit for Indy right now. They could use another pass catcher because I think they're going to need some help in the pass game. But having Jonathan Taylor there will make a big, big difference for Matt Ryan. Again, I think he excelled in Atlanta when he did, in part because they had a great running game. That was Devontae Freeman. That was what was the other one's name? Coleman.
Tevin Coleman.
They were terrific that year, those two backs. And so if you have a running game, you give Matt Ryan some play action. Oh, I think he's going to be good. He's going to be better than anything else Frank Reich has had there the last few years.
Michael Turner early on, too. Now, he always had help on offense. He makes mistakes. The guy's not perfect.
Ryan's in Malden. Ryan, go.
Hey, how's it going, guys? So, I'm pissed off. About the past bad decisions, but I guess you could say right now I'm more upset. You know, we're trying to bring Joe Judge in to help Mac Jones. That's just bad. You know, it's like trying to help a pit bull, trying to help a poodle. Also, we're just bringing in the same old names and really not trying to help them out. I do not think they're going to be an playoff contender. And one other thing, who's going to be the head offensive coordinator? I heard they're trying to bring in Brian Hoyer in to make the calls, to play the calls.
No, they're not going to have
the case.
Yeah, Ryan, they're not going to have an offensive coordinator. Bill's going to do it all. He's going to call the plays on offense. He's going to run the defense. He's going to do everything. He's going to be the GM. And he doesn't have to answer to anybody, apparently, ever. And he'll just hire all his kids and his friends' kids. That's what the whole thing will be.
And the friends of his kids.
Right. Right. You're right. Exactly. Yes. And have him communicate with agents at the combine.
Yes.
The whole nine yards. Oh, man. Talk about frustrating.
Bill Belichick, an offense coordinator, is going to be f-ing awesome, AJ.
So that's going to be really fun.
You know, at the end of the season, I can't tell you how many people called the show and said they're getting better. They're going in the right direction. 10-7. Yes, they got their doors blown off. Even Belichick said at one point, is what happened in the Buffalo game in the playoffs, is that who we are, or do we have to take the big picture? Remember that comment?
Yeah.
Something to that effect, that comment of, is that really who we are, or do we have to take a bigger view of it? So let's take the bigger view. Fine. Again, how about the bigger view with everybody else in the conference? Because I look at them all and say, I see big windows now for Cincinnati. Kansas City's had one for a while now. Buffalo. I see really big windows there. And I think the Patriots have a lot of ground to cover. A lot of ground. I do want to add in something on the Red Sox here. We're going to continue with calls on the Patriots all day long. Because, again, frankly, after the Matt Ryan thing yesterday, I caught my breath. I'd been out last week. I looked at it. I said, this is unbelievable. I just said this to Murray during the break. It really is freaking unbelievable that you would see this much activity in the conference with that many teams, while the Patriots are just standing there holding their pigskin in their hands. Because that's what this thing feels like. But I want to get back to the Trevor story and the residuals of, because I really think it's as much a Xander Bogaerts story as it is a Trevor story.
Tale.
Yes, tale. That's a better way to go. That's right.
Parable.
A Trevor Story account.
I like Trevor story. It's like when you read the USA Today today.
Right, exactly. So, I saw some stats today that further emphasized to me that this whole thing about Xander Bogaerts' defense is complete and utter dog food. We'll get to that when we come back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
What do you want to talk about?
Like in Framingham, why?
Felger and Mass.
Hey, I love your show. I don't agree with anything you guys ever say, though.
More Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Just a few things. Isolate his moves at short, trying to get his first step going. That's about it. You know, if you look at his tools and the way we grade him, you know, the only thing that we need him to do is kind of like get that first step going. And if he does that, his range is going to be better. You know, and obviously out conversions, there's no problem there. You know, what he gets, he turns into outs. So it's just about the first step, and made some adjustments about his base and how, you know, his pre-pitch. So far, so good.
That's Alex Cora talking about Xander Bogaerts. We're going to get back to the Patriots, but I want everybody to indulge me for just a moment. As I said this yesterday, I actually wrote this for our website today as well at 98.5thesportshub.com. This whole idea that Xander Bogaerts' defense is some sort of problem is freaking asinine. It's really gotten to the point where it's pissing me off because I just think it's wrong. And I blame the analytics frauds and everybody else, and that's unfair too because, look, I think some of the analytics are valuable. I just think that the problem with these metrics guys, and I'm talking about the Millikens of the world, with all due respect to Tyler because I love him, but you can't see the forest through the trees. Well, Bogaerts' metrics defensively are poor. Are they? Tell me how. Well, defensive run saved. Okay, so I think I said this yesterday, Murray. I think this past year, Xander Bogaerts was a -9 in defensive run saved at shortstop. -9. Well, the season's 162 games. He played a lot. He plays a lot of games. He's out there all the time. So he costs him a run and a half a month on defense. And offensively, he's worth way, way more than that. So then I started to look some of it up this morning. And I went with FanGraphs, which has... Now, again, Murray, you got to bear with me here.
Sure.
This is your F war, not your B war.
Yeah, this is FU war. So they have a stat that they call DEF, which I presume meant for defense. But it actually stands for defensive runs above average.
Oh, of course.
It's an old Jersey Shore term.
So, measures a player's defensive value relative to league average, but factors in what position you're playing on the field. So, in other words, a shortstop's going to get some benefit of the doubt because he's more important. I like this stat, and I'll tell you why. Because a guy like Xander Bogaerts, if he can play average defense at shortstop, is worth more than a guy who plays average defense at catcher. That's a bad example. That's a bad example.
First base.
I was going to say, actually, left field. Okay, let's just use left field.
But don't you mean above average?
No, I mean average.
Okay.
Because if your defense is average at that spot, but your offense is off the charts, then overall, you have tremendous value. So in other words, the real value for the Red Sox in having Xander Bogaerts is playing him at shortstop. Because he hits like a third baseman, or he hits like a first baseman. He gives you middle-of-the-order production, but at a spot on the diamond where most people sacrifice offense for defense.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Okay, so in other words, if you compare the Red Sox offensively at shortstop to most every other team in the league, the advantage is huge. Huge. It's the reason why in the 90s, to give you a better understanding of what I'm going at here, the Red Sox won a lot of games. The Yankees won a lot of games. The Texas Rangers won a lot of games. They're all in the playoffs all the time, vying for championships, American League championships. And you know why? One of the big advantages they had? They all had productive catchers. So they had an extra bat in the lineup that other teams did not have.
Veritek, Posada,
Pudge,
Rodriguez, yeah.
Without sacrificing defense too much. This is the value of a guy like Bogaerts. If he can play average defense at shortstop, and Alex Cora, I thought, articulated it really well there, where he says, we know that what he gets to, he converts into outs. He's got good hands. He's an accurate thrower. So it's not like he's chucking the ball all over the yard.
And his bat outweighs whatever perceived deficiencies that there are.
By a huge margin. So I looked this up. Over the last 4 years, which starts with when Alex Cora got here, and this is an important fact. Okay, because Xander Bogaerts' career trajectory changed the day that Alex Cora got here. That's when Bogaerts started to hit for power and started to swing the bat like a guy who's 6'3" instead of a Punch and Judy shortstop.
Oh, right. Farrell hated him.
And they knew what pitches were coming. That also.
Well, so I suppose there might have been that too, Jones. But he, if you look at his stats, it clearly changed the year that Cora got here. Starting that year, Xander Bogaerts ranks 9th in that defensive stat that I just gave you. 9th. Does that suck?
No.
In fact, it means he's pretty good.
Top 10 even.
Yes. Yes. And so again, it weights the fact that he's a shortstop over other players, but it tells you there is great value there in a player like that.
So why do these geeks ignore this stat?
Because they're morons. Because they can't see the forest through the trees. They're so caught up in the minutia of every little detail and every little stat that they're focused on the warts. Well, his range isn't that great. You're right, it's not. So what? And I said this yesterday, neither was Derek Jeter's. Derek Jeter, in one of those years in this defensive stat, at the what I would call the prime of his career, ranked 39th out of 49 shortstops in the big leagues. Offensively, he was a force, but in a lot of ways, he was way worse than Xander Bogaerts was. Did you ever hear the Yankees talking about trading Derek Jeter or letting him go or not keeping him? No, because they understood the full value of him on the roster. So this boiling everything down to minutia, to me, is just exhausting. I do start to look at it and say, boy, you people are so intent on proving how effing smart you are that you can't see that you've become stupid. You just can't see it. Drives me freaking batty. Oh.
Anyway, no, you're right. They get blinded by these narratives, like in the Illuminati, because this is, you could see this gaining steam last year. And now that they've signed Trevor Story, again, overall, good for them. They spent the money. But, I mean, that's what this is about. It's about moving on from Xander Bogaerts more than anything else. What did you think about all this, Jones?
Oh, well, the Story signing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think it's actually pretty typical Chaim Bloom in the way the Red Sox have been going about things. Like, I am happy they spent. I doubted they would spend. I doubted that they would spend into the luxury tax. So good for them that they're doing that. But then I start to think about it and I go, well, if they're just really cheaping out on Bogaerts to sign a big money guy like Story, that kind of is like the Tampa way. And that kind of is what the Red Sox have been doing.
I don't like it either.
They're not making a big splash on Story per se. They're cheaping out on Bogaerts. Like, I mean, that's where it seems like it's heading. So it's just, it's another big ticket guy that they're letting go. And that would be my fear. But I'm with you, Maz, on like stats and analytics and the way these sports gets covered. It's a bigger problem with front offices because, you know, that's how teams are built and that's how players are paid, et cetera, and that influences how the game is played. But, you know, media types who dig too deep into these analytics, it's all about impressing each other. It's all just a circle bleep of trying to impress one another about who knows more about F war and B war and how many things, you know, buzzy terms that you can drop into a column or a blog post or a tweet. That's all this is. It's all just everybody pleasuring themselves talking about the same stupid stats. That's all it is. So you know you're part of the club.
Oh, it's mind-numbing. It really is. Like, you know, see, I know what they're talking about because I'm smart.
Right.
And I would say, well, maybe you're good at math, but you suck at baseball. Because I've seen the guy play. He's a tremendous addition on any team. He's a tremendous asset. Let me just take this call quickly. I want to get to one other thing on this topic. Kevin in Cambridge, go.
Yeah, so I wanted to, I believe you possibly articulated the same, but with Bogaerts at shortstop, he's going to have more opportunities anyway than an outfielder.
Correct.
And then in addition to that, his mistakes will cost the Red Sox less than a mistake in the outfield.
On like a on like an opportunity basis.
On an opportunity basis, when the ball is hit to the outfield, you're going to get more extra bases. You're going to get more runs off of that single mistake as opposed to a single mistake in the infield.
Yeah. So look again, Kevin. It depends on the mistake, but I understand your point. Right, the ones in the outfield are probably going to be bigger. I get that. And look, the whole thing's riddled with inconsistencies now. So on the one hand, they want to tell you that they want pitchers that keep the ball out of play. So because we don't like the chaos that goes with fielding. But then they want a good defensive shortstop? Well, what are you doing that for? If you're trying to keep the ball out of the play, then why can't you skimp at shortstop? But again, we talked yesterday about Matt the Stat, who was an emailer we got, who used to be he was an auction winner on the program and once co-hosted a segment here on Felger and Maz for a donation he made to Christmas in the City, or a bid he made to Christmas in the City. And he said about Chaim Bloom in an email he wrote to me that Bloom seems to manage the team very much like a financial nerd that's looking for surplus value over everything else. Meaning, do you remember when Billy Beane first came along, there was that big stat of cost per win?
Sure.
Okay, so in other words, Oakland might win 82 games. But because their payroll was so much lower than everybody else, the A's were actually the most efficient team in baseball.
Yeah.
They were spending less money per win than any other team. So now the war concept has created a similar dynamic in baseball. So in other words, Xander Bogaerts is a better player than Trevor Story. Fact. Fact.
Yeah, and until the signing, every Red Sox fan on the planet would have agreed with that.
And I think a lot of them still do, except for the nerds. Okay? So he's a better player, but is Bogaerts at $30 million worth more than Story at $23 million? This is where you get into that stupid conversation. And I would say, I don't give a rat's ass about the extra $7 million. I want the better player. There's no salary cap in baseball. Yes, there's a luxury tax, but they're the Red Sox. Part of the advantage of being in a big market is that you can do it that way. I want the better player. Why do I have to play that stupid game? Then I'm doing what the Patriots do. You want to give me that NFL salary cap bull crap? I don't want to play that game either. Get me good players. I want good players. Oh, and then you make up this bull crap that Xander Bogaerts' defense sucks, and it doesn't suck. God, that's so annoying. I just hate when people manipulate the facts. Because we never do that.
Yeah, it's the worst. I hate that, too.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Oh, I don't know why this one ran up my backside so much like it did. You got a franchise guy there. You're homegrown. He wants to stay. And what, you're going to push him out the door? Whether it's the team doing it or the nerds, you know, the Millikens of the world.
No, it started from the front office, and they just pick it up because they worship Chaim Bloom. It's a false narrative. That's why it goes up your caboose the way that it does.
Be careful with that kid. He's a good player. He's a good player, and the other guys on the team gravitate to him, whether you want to believe it or not. Jones has got your headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
They love each other.
That's a lie. It's bullcrap.
And the audience loves them.
No, definitely grumpy. I don't care. Well, listen, guess what? You're in New England.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Up.
He's so consistent at what he does. You know, he prepares and, you know, he goes about his business. And, you know, he put work in the offseason. A few things that we talk about in November, and you can see it, you know, on the field. So, I mean, He's still a beast. You know, he's still really, really good.
You feel like he's pretty good at kind of tuning out the market stuff. You know, obviously, he has a...
I believe that this year is a little bit louder because of the class that just got signed, right? But, you know, the only thing he can control is go out there and perform, and he's been doing that for a while.
More Alex Cora on Xander Bogaerts. Don't take for granted what you have. Kid plays 145, 150 games every year, which is a lot in this day and age. Plays good defense. Not great, but totally fine, solid defense. And hits like a middle-of-the-order bat from a position where not many teams have that. Don't be stupid. We've been talking about the Patriots a lot. That'll continue to be the crux of the discussion all afternoon. Josh is in Lexington. What do you got, Josh?
Hey, I like the Xander talk, although no one cares about baseball anymore anyway. I thought it was really interesting that the AFC West seemed to recognize that Mahomes and the Chiefs aren't going anywhere anytime soon, so they had to get better, enter Wilson, Herbert, Davante Adams, Chandler Jones, et cetera. It's actually good for the Brady and the Belichick, I suppose, over the last two decades, that the AFC East never seemed to get that memo. So I think it sort of helped, maintain us. Also, can you explain the difference between the salary cap and cash outlay as far as like how the Bills can afford Tre'Davious, Diggs, Allen, et cetera, and the Patriots don't seem to have the salary cap or space, but apparently the cash outlay is a little bit different.
Yeah, so look, Josh, the money thing gets complicated, but the bottom line is this. The cap is accounting, okay? The cash outlay is actual outlay. So, you know, cash spent. So for I don't want to bore you with the details. It gets too complicated.
The guaranteed money is the only thing that really matters.
Right. And if you put it in, if you put more money in the signing bonus, it gets spread out over time and you can manipulate the cap. It's just, you know, I'll leave it at that. You're going to Google it and you can find it that way. It's too hard to explain on the radio. The part about the division, though, Murray, in retrospect, you look at it now, think of the advantage the Patriots had in their division for the longest time. Okay, Patrick Mahomes has been with the Chiefs now. What is it, Jones? 5 years?
Yeah, 5 years-ish? As a starter, I think he's had four playoff runs plus his rookie year where he played like a game, yeah.
Okay, and now he has to deal with Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson, you know, and I don't know if I want to put the Raiders in that group, but they're not horrible at the very least.
Derek Carr would have been the best quarterback in the AFC East for 20 years until Josh Allen.
What the Patriots faced during that period of time was pathetic. And the fact that there were Patriots fans who defended it at that point in time. Well, the Patriots record's the same against everybody. Well, yeah, because they were really good, but the division sucked.
Yeah, it was a given. They were going to steamroll those teams, and they might lose one in Miami. That was the only concern.
Chris and Everett on Trevor Story and the Red Sox. Go ahead, Chris.
So I appreciate the fact that the Red Sox spent money and signed Trevor Story.
Me too.
Has anybody taken into account that, like, it may not work, and we have a product in Xander Bogaerts where we know what we're getting, 330 and 110 RBIs. So, like, if this is only a leverage play for Trevor Story to eventually take over a shortstop because they don't want to pay him, I'm not for it. The Red Sox already did that once with John Lester. They had a proven commodity, and then they ended up getting rid of him for David Price. Like, I don't understand it. And on the caller's last point, they also should be taking into account Bill Belichick making $25 million. That's part of the football cost.
Definitely. Absolutely it is. Jones, I just asked Murray this during the break. Are you convinced that Trevor Story can play?
Kind of. I mean, he's a good player, I think. He's a good player.
Okay, do the numbers away from Coors Field concern you at all?
Yes. I mean, I love how now you can't look at splits anymore and you're stupid to look at splits. And maybe this is where you're going with this, the Coors effect. That affects players not only at home, but also on the road.
The hangover effect. Yeah, Coors hangover.
The Coors hangover effect. No, it concerns me. I know there are some players who have been successful outside of Coors. There's a lot of players who turned into pumpkins when they left, too. And their numbers were a product of playing.
And there's something to be said about that market, too. Like, is there a lot of pressure being a Colorado Rocky?
I think he's won one playoff game in his career. And I think it was a play-in game, or, you know, the wild card game, rather. Yeah. I think he's only played in 5 and won 1, I think. So it's not like his fault that he hasn't been to a lot of playoff games, but he's not exactly played under a microscope, to your point.
I mean, no move's a true slam dunk, but, you know, there's some questions there. It's not like this is just, it's going to be the best move ever. Good for them. Like, Bloom wins again. Himes dunking on guys. Like, I don't know. He strikes out a lot. There's that elbow issue that could be a concern going forward. And he's never played in a market like this.
Well, and thank you for bringing up the elbow issue. What if something goes awry there and he can't play short anymore? And you let Xander Bogaerts walk out the door and Marcelo Mayer's 3 years away. And that's the other one, too, that I always love. Yeah, we got Marcelo Mayer coming. Well, when? 3 years from now? I got 3 seasons to play between now and then. Like, I got to worry about those, too. Max is in Gloucester on the Patriots. Go ahead, Max.
Yeah, I mean, real quick on Trevor's story, I mean, watching a lot of Dodgers-Rockies games just because that's who I like, he's not the same guy away from Coors Field. He's so not. I mean, I think he's still a major league player. I think he'll be okay, but he's not the same guy. But Belichick in decline, I'm really curious, how much credit do you give Belichick for, like, the bounce back year last year? Because obviously as the coach and the GM, the buck stops with him, but, like, the true successes last year, draft, collaborative process, Mac Jones, Josh, even the defense, yeah, he turned it around after Dallas, but what do? He gave it right back to the coaches, and it went in the toilet. I'm starting to think that the free agency push wasn't even necessarily his, because how different does it look this year versus last year when it was more collaborative? So, like, how much credit do you even give him for the bounce-back year last year?
Okay, so that's an interesting question. Murray, what would you give Bill for a grade last year?
B.
Jones?
Is it all-encompassing, GM and coach?
Sure.
See.
So I'm probably somewhere in between the two here, but I'd lean more towards Murray. So I thought overall they turned it around a little bit. They got it back on the right track. Now, whether or not they can take it to the next level, I don't know. I think the first step is easier. I think to go from 7-9 to 10-7 is easier than going from 10-7 to, you know, 13-4. I think going to 13-4 is now a tough step.
Yeah, but considering the money that was spent, that 3-win improvement, that should have happened.
Yes, absolutely, Murray. Absolutely, 100%. And the other thing is, in retrospect, when you look at it, how good was the free agent class?
Eh.
Because Jonnu Smith sucked.
Well, Nelson, he had Jakob Johnson blocking him, so.
Yeah. Nelson Agholor sucked.
Devin Godchow sucked.
So, you know, he hit on some. He missed on others. Overall, it was okay. Hunter Henry was okay. He was pretty good. I shouldn't say okay. He was pretty good.
So him and Judon were the stars of that.
Absolutely.
The free agency class.
Yep, and I like Kendrick Bourne, too, right? I'll take Kendrick Bourne. I can totally live with that. But it's not like he nailed every one. And the other thing of building through the draft, I think hopefully they set that thing in the right direction. But how many of the guys in this year's draft are going to have a significant impact on this season? So Barmore was good last year. And at one point they were 9-4 and he was a factor. But then down the stretch, disappeared. A lot of them did. And their defense completely regressed. So the point being is the year one impact of the rookies is not going to be through the roof in all probability. That's not going to happen. So how are they going to get better without adding some key free agents to keep up with everybody else in the AFC? That is really the primary topic today on Felger and Maz. We'll continue with your calls when we come back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Oh, he is a manipulative weasel.
And Matt.
He does himself no service by actually talking.
You've got to listen to Believe.
It's about me. Yes, absolutely. It's about me. No question.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Welcome back, Felger and Maz. Going to get right back to your phone calls. I think the big story, really, in the last couple of weeks, with all the maneuvering that has gone on with the Bruins and the Red Sox, and it all warrants attention, and certainly the play of the Celtics, which we'll get to as well. And I should mention that we're going to get back to the NHL trade deadline at 4 o'clock, follow up a little bit on Don Sweeney's maneuverings. We'll hit some Celtics in the 4 o'clock hour as well. But I think really, up to now, over the last 10 days, the ground the Patriots have lost in the AFC is, to me, a major story. Major, major story. All these teams that have added quarterbacks, added players, and the Patriots have not just gone sideways, they've gotten worse. They've lost J.C. Jackson. Who else have they lost that I'm leaving out? They traded away Shaq Mason. I mean, I think the players...
Their second-best offensive lineman, or arguably their best. It's either him or David Andrews.
So now, look, I thought Mason, you know, the fact that the Patriots had as much money invested in guard, I never liked that. But so you want to tell me that that money is going to go into other spots? Great, but I haven't seen any sort of acquisition that makes me feel like the trade was worth it yet. We'll see how that shakes out.
Well, Maz, you might have missed this, and Jim, I think you were here for this. He's supposedly on a cruise, Shaq Mason.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
which means that maybe, and I know this was kind of some scuttlebutt last week, maybe he hasn't taken his physical yet. Maybe have the Patriots announced that? Or are they still waiting on it? Like, do they really have the cap space or do they need to wait to make moves because of that? So that was something that was at least bandied about last week. Shaq Mason's on a cruise and it didn't sound like he was hurrying back. So maybe that's got him in a bit of a holding pattern for their book calculations.
And I would say even so, and that could be Jones. The players they've added, I mean, a couple of them I like. You know, I don't mind Ty Montgomery as sort of a pickup guy, but it doesn't change their offense, I don't think.
No.
Would you be shocked if he got cut at some point during camp?
Like, no, of course not.
That guy's no lock to make.
Of course not. So it's just, and really, it's relative to everybody else. Competition's always relative to everybody else. You know, the it doesn't matter what the number is. What matters is where you rank.
I know you mentioned earlier the Fournette thing. We kind of think it might be leverage. Do you think they had real interest in Fournette?
Yes.
I do, yeah.
Do you think that means that another player could be going, like Damian Harris? We're talking about Shaq Mason and J.C. Jackson leaving. I mean, maybe Harris is another guy who's ticketed to go somewhere.
Yes, I absolutely would not rule that out. I think people have speculated on that, and I think they're right. But as it turns out, Leonard Fournette is not part of their plans. He's back in Tampa.
Yeah, no, he's back in the warm bosom of Tom Brady. He wants to win.
What it feels like now in retrospect is like Leonard Fournette used them. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like. Sean is in Northboro. Go ahead, Sean.
If we're feeling this frustrated as Patriots fans, what do you think Robert and Jonathan have to say? I haven't heard anything from them except for like NFTs and wedding announcements. So are they leaving Bill out there to hang on his own so at the end of the season they can say this hasn't worked over 3 years?
I tend to think so.
Okay, go ahead, Barry.
This is kind of my theory. I know that the caller references. There's a lot going on right now, and Robert Kraft's getting married. Maybe there's a lot going on with wedding plans, and they're running their other businesses. But you still have time to make comments about your football team, which is maybe your biggest asset, right? So I tend to think that after last year, and that they gives them the open checkbook, get us back in the conversation in the AFC, go spend. This is our counter to Tom Brady leaving and going and winning a Super Bowl championship with Tampa Bay. After that, you know, now we're going to kind of let you hang out there to dry a little bit. It didn't work out that well. You got us back to the playoffs, but most of these free agent signings didn't really work out. So was that, I don't know, was that money spent correctly? So you're on your own. You run the football operation, so you go truly do that. We're not going to comment on it. Anything goes to you, Bill. We're going to step back. And I think that's probably the right play for them.
So I don't think they are rooting for him to fail.
No, and I'm not. Don't put words in my mouth. That's not how I just think it's, well, you're the one that runs the football organization, so you can deal with all the questions about the football organization. Like, we're going to step back here. It's on you now, Bill. This is how you wanted it, so now it's on you.
I mean, a year ago,
I don't think they're rooting for him to fail.
A year ago, Robert Kraft did not sound thrilled about having to spend the kind of money that he spent. If you remember, what was that line, Jimmy Stewart? Remember, didn't he, that line, we played the cut, where he said, or maybe we read it, I don't remember, where he said, you know, we used to make fun of those teams that spent all that money, and now we're one of them. It was effectively something like that. And so I can't imagine they were doing cartwheels over spending all that dough, and I'm sure they looked at Bill and said, don't expect it to happen again. So, look, I think it's an important year for Belichick. I have felt that from the beginning. I think they're all important now, you know, post-Brady. I think if last year had been a bad year, we'd be looking at it very differently.
I was just going to say that. Like, in retrospect, don't you think Bill was feeling some heat last year?
Yes.
Like the line from Reese over the weekend, which maybe is a, not to knock the reporting, I think it's good reporting, but just maybe is an insight into how the Patriots are thinking. Well, last year they kind of rolled two free agent spending seasons into one. Well, why did Bill front load it? You know, why wasn't Bill cautious with it and managing it? Because he was worried about his own ass. He was worried about what happened if they weren't good last year. So he front loaded the thing and spent like crazy last year to become competent. And they were, but now it hasn't left him with much left in the cupboard.
Right. Why did he do it, Jones? Because he had to. Right? He had to as a means of survival. Knicks and Providence.
Hey, guys. So we all know that Bill was interested in Baker Mayfield back in the 2018 draft. He's probably got no market for other teams maybe outside of Seattle. So I'm thinking, you know, he's due $18 million. We got about 12 right now. You guys think Bill would take a shot on him for 1 year, let Max sit back behind? I'll hang up and listen to what you guys got to say. Thanks.
Yeah, nope. Jones?
No.
Murray?
Nope.
We're all no. Let's move right along.
If he was going to bring in a quarterback like that, he'd bring back Garoppolo.
Exactly. And not only that, but you do if you're going to upgrade a quarterback, you would upgrade at a much higher, you know, you'd go get Deshaun Watson is the point. Chris is in Worcester. Chris, go.
Hey, Max. Thanks for taking the call, because I really want to ask you this question. In a vacuum, with this year, we had some hiccups at second base. Do you like our infield now, Devers, Bogarts, Story? And is it going to be Daubach at first? Correct me if I'm wrong, right? Do you like that kind of up the middle in Renfro and right and whoever in center and left?
Yeah, Renfro's gone. They traded him for Jackie Bradley Jr. So your outfield is going to be Verdugo, Kiki Hernandez, and Jackie Bradley. That's your starting outfield at the moment. Defensively, I like it. I think defensively their outfield's pretty good. I think they're going to be, if Story's healthy, they'll be better at second base. Dahlbeck was better at the end of last year, but overall their defense at the corners was brutal.
Where'd Castellanos end up going?
Philly?
Yeah, that's right. Him and Schwarber both signed.
Okay. Because that was someone I thought that they should, you know, look, the Story's signing fine, but Castellanos, of those names that were out there, I thought would be a better fit for them. They need another bat in that outfield. Because, again, I keep saying this, which, you know, much to the chagrin of Jones, as of right now, you're going to be seeing way more of Jackie Bradley Jr. than you should.
Yeah, he shouldn't be playing every day. That I would agree with. And so it's possible I missed a maneuver in there somewhere. Do they have a right-handed hitting outfielder
off
the bench?
It's who was the prospect last year? Why are we all blanking on this? The kid who they called up last year.
Oh, Jarren Duran?
Yes.
Okay, again, but he hits lefty.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I thought he was platooning with Bradley in right field, or at least maybe it's platoon's the wrong word, but I thought he was going to split time in right field anyway.
So they could use a right-handed bat in the outfield. They could, because Verdugo's left-handed, Bradley's left-handed, and neither one of them excels at hitting left-handed pitching. So they could use a right-handed bat out there. That part's for sure. Anyway, top of the hour here, no commercials. We do want to revisit the Bruins trade deadline from yesterday, and we're going to sprinkle in some of this other stuff during the course of the day. We'll continue with your calls on the Patriots. But in retrospect, now that it is all blown over, did the Bruins do enough at the deadline? And there may be a different question to ask as it pertains to what the Bruins tried to do at the deadline and couldn't. And we'll explain that when we come back. But Jones will get you caught up on headlines. And then we'll continue with your phone calls here on Folk.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
It's Boston's most listened to afternoon radio program.
This isn't funny. This is sports.
Felger.
We are not here to laugh.
And Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
John, did you feel like you were close to getting any help up front?
Yeah, we certainly had an awful lot of inquiries in terms of what we were trying to probably augment our group, and moving the pieces around and where guys were going to play. You know, it was a little bit of a challenge for us if it didn't really, move the needle. But obviously we would like to probably add a little more depth there. But several of our guys have really stepped up and played well, and we feel that we're in a good spot overall with our hockey club.
Hour number three here, Felger and Maz. Again, Mike is out. Jim Murray is alongside Adam Jones here to give us headlines as well. We're now a day past the NHL trading deadline. Bruins obviously made a significant move on defense. I almost called him Humpus again.
Humpus.
Hampus. Hampus Lindholm. Hampus Lindholm.
I kind of like Humpus.
Yeah, me too. I like it better too. It'll sneak out on its own. For some reason, I can't get that one right. I'm not joking. Hampus Lindholm.
The summer of Humpus.
So a lot of people, myself included, thought that the Bruins were going to move Jake DeBrusk yesterday. They signed a new extension yesterday morning. 2 years, two years with an annual cap hit of $4 million. And that never happened. So DeBrusk is still here. Certainly people thought that extension was a precursor to them being able to move DeBrusk, get some other forward help in here. They didn't do that. And so... Now, to me, that tells me that DeBrusk was probably largely unmovable, which, the Bruins can take another crack at during the offseason, but there were certainly some risks there. I would not dispute that part of the story, that if you can't move DeBrusk over the summer and you're stuck with $4 million, Don Sweeney is going to look like a donkey. But the fact that they didn't add forward help, and I got a lot of emails about this from Bruins fans in the last 24 hours and from friends of mine who are Bruins fans, who sent me text messages that are just livid about the fact that they didn't get help at forward. Legitimate beef? Should they have done something? Could they have done something? What do you think, Murray?
Yeah, it feels like they could have, and it feels a little bit incomplete. If you're looking for a grade for me, for Sweeney and what he's done, I don't know, B minus, B? They needed a left-shot defenseman. They got one. They extended him. Young guy that looks like he's going to be a really good fit. So I like that. we'll hate that contract like poison 5 years from now, but that's a future us problem. So I like that, but it does feel a little bit incomplete. There should have been another addition there in terms of trying to find, you know, a real centerman for them to go on a deep run, because it feels like as of right now, they're still not on the level of your Carolinas, Floridas, Tampa.
Jones?
Yeah, I think all they did was keep pace with the rest of the division and really a lot of the Eastern Conference.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.